Hello and welcome to day four of the World Cup Minute. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm feeling refreshed today, Josh. Yesterday was our post-US Wales sort of hangover cast. We acquitted ourselves well and figured out what happened in the World Cup in day three. You took the day off today for day four. I worked from home. You know, I'll put work in scare quotes there. So I feel like I've watched maybe more World Cup today throughout the course of four matches than I have since the kickoff. So we'll see if that translates into any interesting takes. You know, what was your overall opinion of day four, Josh? Did you enjoy the football? Are you sour on it?
Yeah.
Are you totally over the World Cup at this point?
No, it's great. I mean, I felt like day four was kind of like a replay of day three, right? You have the stunning upset. You have a couple of slightly boring matches, and then you've got a blowout from a contender, right? That was like it basically exactly what we saw the previous day. And so, if you give me a match like Germany, Spain, Germany, Japan every day, that's gonna be a huge success. I just think, the game I kind of want to start with here is the, and by the way, I'm in tribute to Belgium, Brandon, and Yuri Tielemans, who subbed off at halftime. I'm wearing my Leicester scarf today. I'm trying to be a little more festive, you know, but it's a holiday week right now in America. We've got family in town. I'm like sneaking away into different spots to try to record these episodes. Yep. But
tune in tomorrow for our Thanksgiving episode, which is going to be, how we're going to find time. Yeah. Luckily, we'll be in the same home celebrating Thanksgiving together. We can easily sort of like slip away, but we'll see how that works, how much vanilla tryptophan and red wine we've got coursing through our bloodstream at that point. Okay, so you're paying tribute to Yuri Tielemans. Do you think Tielemans was subbed off at halftime because he was so enraged that Kevin De Bruyne didn't find him in that counterattack where he was wide open through on goal?
Weird match for De Bruyne. I saw Michael Cox talk about this after the game, and he said of all the contenders who won or lost so far, he was most disappointed in Belgium, and he just thought that they had absolutely they're totally out of sync. And I think, I mean, honestly, this is why I don't think neither you or I worship at the XG shrine, but this is like a match like this is why XG was sort of became popular, right? Because this is a match that you see 1-0 and you're like, wow, like I guess they just kept it tight, you know, and took their chance. And it was like, actually, no, they should have been down three goals in the first 30 minutes of that match. It took a absolutely insane pass that went over 18 players, and Batshuayi took a great touch and scored. And then from there, they basically made a couple of halftime subs to play defensively, and that was it. And I came away really impressed with Canada. I suppose they did what a good team does, right? Which is I think from halftime on, Belgium was fine. The first half, I was not hugely impressed with them, but I think that Canada, I came away very impressed with them, and I think they were completely out of gas, right? By the time that 60th minute rolled around, or maybe even earlier than that, it was like they needed 11 subs. Like they needed like a keeper included. Everyone needed to go off and get replaced by some. I don't care how talented they were. They just needed fresh legs because they worked so hard in that first half. They could have had two or like there was at least two legitimate penalty shots, maybe three. I was actually a little surprised that there wasn't a foul called on that third penalty shot because he does get him on the leg. Like I feel like that you could have seen that called. So it was pretty.
Yeah, the ref sort of like I spent all of his penalty bucks on that first handball shout. I think. I too was impressed by Canada. I thought they were full of ideas. They were full of hustle, as you say. Their final ball was just kind of universally bad, unfortunately.
Yep.
They just couldn't properly set themselves up for a high XG chance just a good scoring chance, and Belgium just were able to ride that through the second half. And I was as like the chief Kevin De Bruyne fan, at least in North America, I was really kind of dismayed at his performance. He seemed frustrated with the movement of his teammates on Belgium. Like he didn't quite know where they were going to be and how to locate them. I think He's shoddy in a craftsman
way. Blames his tools, Brandon.
Right. Yeah, does he have it too easy at Manchester City where he's just passing to Guardiola robots all the time? But yeah, he was just really out of sync there. So I agree with Michael Cox's take. But I mean, so the result is what it is. You know, I think Canada could come back and maybe get a win. But what do you think of Belgium after that performance? Like, they seem like a team that's probably going to have a very harried exit in the, you know, in the round of 16.
Yeah, it feels like, I mean, Kevin De Bruyne is so good that, that we should probably reserve judgment, right? Because I still think that he could just boss them. I mean, first of all, they won, right? So like they're kind of already, there's a good chance they're just going to win this group. But I think that, and if Lukaku remains out, like, let's see how long that happens for. I mean, Batshuayi was fine, I mean, given the chances. And you have Trossard, too, who I thought actually played pretty well when he came on. He was sort of, I felt like he was kind of two minds when he came on the pitch. It was kind of like, well, I want to go and attack here, but that's not really my marching orders, right? Like, I think it was kind of like, get in, then dribble out, right? It's like, take the extra 20 seconds, just knock it off the clock. And, you know, and they really, I mean, they didn't time waste too much. It wasn't, it really wasn't that egregious, honestly. 5 minutes is probably more than you needed to have for that second half. But yeah, I think defensively was the big area of concern, right? I mean, you just have Jan Vertonghen and Toby Alderweireld who are, you know, once extremely good players. Wouldn't necessarily call them that now. Although, was it Toby? I forget who sprayed the pass for Mishi. Was it Toby or was it Jan?
It was Alderweireld. Yes, it was Toby.
It was. T-Bone. Yeah, it was Toby. Yeah, T-Bone. Yeah, a couple of ex-Spurs legends. So, but I think in general, they really can't. If Canada can, not that, I mean, Canada is a reasonably strong attacking team, but to see them kind of run over Belgium in the first half, if somebody else does that, right? Like the Spain team that we saw right before that, if that Spain team meets that Belgium defense, it's very hard to see Belgium winning that game.
That we can kind of segue to Spain, Costa Rica if we want, but that Spanish team was unbelievable. I do think it's funny leaving this Belgium Canada discussion that we're talking about Belgium after winning 1-0, like they're on their way out of the tournament, whereas teams like Argentina and Germany have lost, and we're talking about, well, they'll probably still top the group. Come on, who are we kidding here?
So. I guess let's stay in the group for a second because so Canada loses this match only 1-0, right? So in terms of goal difference, Belgium could certainly win the next two games, in which case goal difference really may be a big factor for you know, the second team in that group. You know, Morocco and Croatia, the other two teams in the group, they played a 0-0 draw in the morning. This is, you know, again, the early games here are on at 5 a.m. So realistically, there's a lot of watching highlights and catching up on the earliest match of the day. But, you know, from what I was able to watch, I mean, it, you know, felt like Croatia was pretty dominant, pretty on top of the ball, and forced some good saves out of Morocco. And that was it. I mean, from what I saw, it didn't seem like Morocco had a ton of chances. It's kind of interesting with Croatia. I mean, it's just hard not to feel like they're kind of in the same spot as Belgium, right? Like a kind of end of cycle club. And I don't know. I mean, you know, you have Luka Modric, who he's like Steve Martin, you know, where it's like he always looked old. So it's like we kind of forget how old he really is. Yeah,
he's got the Thomas Mueller disease. 33-year-old Thomas Mueller who looks like he's, you know, 50.
I'm going to Google, how old do you think Modric is? I mean, just without looking.
He's got to be 35.
37.
Yeah. So you've got a 30. Came up a dollar short there. Okay.
37-year-old Modric. Perisic can't be. Yeah. Perisic is 33. I mean, these players are terrific still. And Modric looked like reasonably good today as well, from what I saw. But it's hard to see this team and think, oh, yeah. Like if Canada, if they can, like, keep their legs fresh, like, I think Canada really has a chance, you know, when they play Croatia. And then. And then let's see, you know, let's see what happens with Morocco. I mean, I think that Morocco may end up being the team that finishes fourth in this group. So, you know, again, I feel bad for Alfonso Davies because that guy is the team, right? He's kind of like their Landon Donovan. And so, or not, well, actually, Landon Donovan's maybe not a bad comparison, right? The sort of the player who just kind of like lifted them to another level, right? This Canadian team was so good in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying, and it was really kind of led by Alphonso Davies to a degree.
Yeah, and he's going to be the one to say, let's go to the next level. I do not want to go out there and draw or lose. I feel horrible for Davies. Canada shaped up to be a huge rivals of the U.S. in CONCACAF for the first time in a long time. And so I kind of started to breed this Canadian hate within me. No more maple syrup on our pancakes.
Yeah, that's the name of your fantasy team this year, right? FC Canadian Contempt.
Canadian Contempt. Working title. Canuck Contempt. It's hard to say three times fast. But Davies definitely does not deserve that. And I think that the fans who have okay, so I misspoke yesterday. Canada have been in one World Cup, and it was not pre-war. It was 1986. However, they have yet to score a single goal or a single point in a World Cup final. So I think that definitely changes in this tournament here, thankfully. Yeah. And I hope it stays.
I think so too. Yeah. They got the hard match out of the way. So that brings us to Group G? Group F or Group G, Brandon?
Group E has Germany and Spain. So we're kind of working backwards.
Yeah, it's very confusing. Right. So we have it's a really fun group. I mean, we actually previewed this a little bit yesterday that I said, I wouldn't be surprised if Japan played a little bit of spoiler in this group because this is like a Japan team that's been sort of close to the breakthrough, right? It seems like in the last two World Cups, they were sort of right there, felt poised to do it. And then they finally do it today and well earned too. I mean, that second goal in particular, that was very... I don't mean for everything to be an American reference here, but it was very Landon Donovan 2010 World Cup, right?
Slovenia,
just roofing it, right next to the keeper. It's funny. It's actually a shot you don't see that often. I feel like in the Premier League, I'm trying to think of an example of that recently where it feels like something Sergio Aguero would have done. I don't know. That just feels like an Aguero kind of goal.
That's what you have to do at that angle because you can't go through the keeper because the keeper can cover the near post. So the only way through is over the keeper. And I think you see it a lot. But when you see that attempt a lot, it's sailing over the post or it's going wide
because
you have to strike it pretty fiercely, and then it's all down to the placement. So kudos to Japan for pulling that one off. It was a lot. I mean, it was in so many ways Argentina, Saudi Arabia, again because Germany looked incredible in the first half, and it was how is this team not put Japan to bed at this point? And they just waited too long. You give in a tournament like the World Cup, you give your opposition too much time and you don't capitalize. This 100% can't
Argentina,
happen.
Argentina, Germany, US, top three contenders, all waited too long, Brandon.
You blew it.
I assume there are other teams in the World Cup, but those are the big three, right?
Well, the U.S. is tops that group because we came away with a point where Argentina and Germany did not. So what did you make of this German side watching this match?
Yeah, they had one offside goal or two in the match? At least one, right? And I don't know. I mean, it's sort of... it's hard to say. I mean, I feel like they probably should have won the match.
Definitely.
And Japan, just sort of blitzed him at the end. I mean, that was, I'm sure, what Japan's plan was, right? To get a couple of counterattacking goals. And, they got two of them. I think that was what made it surprising. One counterattacking goal, that's going to happen, but the second one coming, what was it like? I think the first one was at the 75th minute, and then Asano's winner was at the 83rd minute. So, it's like the dream, right? Like when the managers are when the team is drawing everything up the night before, the dream is to keep it close enough so that you can get it and then not give Germany enough time to recover, right? Because it felt like it was just everything was sort of worked out perfectly for them. So now I think they're kind of an interesting spot because – I mean, Germany has to be in trouble, right? Because with Spain winning 7-0 over Costa Rica, I highly doubt that Germany is going to win by that much, right? It's just hard to score seven goals on anybody, any semi-competent squad. Mm-hmm. And so now if Japan is able to get a result over Costa Rica, then, you know, then all of a sudden that's the Spain-Germany match is incredibly important, right? Germany basically has to win that match to go through. So it's pretty exciting. I mean, I think that, you know, this group now is it was already kind of shaping up to be the way going into the World Cup, but now it is clearly the group that I am sort of most interested to see how everything plays out, maybe outside selfishly of my own U.S. group.
Yeah, I did think Germany shone with individual players. Like Jamal Musiala was probably the player of the match, despite Germany losing. Amazing. Talk about old players in those other teams, 19 years old, Musiala starting for Bayern Munich. He's a star. Yep. Gundogan looked great. Yeah. Gnabry looked great, even though maybe he should have been better and more clinical up front, and they might need a little bit more from a player like Thomas Mueller. So anyway, yeah, I agree with you. That does take us to Spain, who look like absolute monsters right now. Now, Costa Rica managed to give Spain even more space than Qatar gave Ecuador, but the proficiency with which Spain worked the ball, it was one of the more technically brilliant performances you'll see in the group stage. Oh, yeah. And like any time Spain had the ball, they had like three passes on. There was always a player to pass to, and they were just basically one and two touch the entire match. It was great. And then even Morata, as we said yesterday, the maligned striker for Spain, comes on and it looks like it's just same old Morata, blowing chances, missing passes, comes away with a goal and an assist. So if Morata's feeling it, that whole Spanish team is feeling it. What do you think about this Olmo guy? So Olmo, he weirdly took a leave of absence. Not a leave of absence. He took a transfer from La Liga to move to Russia. I think it was Dynamo Zagreb, or is that Ukraine? I can't recall.
Yeah. He did it as soon as the Ukraine strike happened, right? He was so in favor of it.
Solidarity, right? Yeah. I remember him from Spain's Euro Championship campaign, and I thought he was quite good in that system. So you can only distinguish Olmo because he's got the blonde hair. Every one of these other Spanish guys are all like 5'9" with the same fade haircut, looking like are very hard to tell apart.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, it's funny. I had Olmo in my world. I'm not doing World Cup. Did you actually end up making a team for World Cup Fantasy? I ended up not doing it at all.
I started a league for our Patreon supporters and never completed my team. So I think.
Wow.
I hope the league is running. I'm sure it is.
I think. Yeah, the player that I'm sort of, I mean, I don't know that I have any strong opinions on Olmo, although I think what he speaks to is the attacking depth in this Spanish squad. And, Gavi scores his first goal, the first World Cup goal for Spain. And was he 18 years old? And so, it's kind of cool. I mean, you know, we were sort of talking about, if these Spanish and German squads, whether they're kind of at the end of not necessarily an end of a cycle, but sort of a transitional period, but you know, maybe that moment is already here a little bit. I mean, God, you look at Gavi and then Ferran Torres. Oh, the goal that he scored, I loved it. He's just a really, it's amazing that Man City was like, nah, Barcelona, you can have him. Like, it's just, I mean, maybe he really pushed for that move. I don't know, but he looks terrific. And he can't be older than like 20 years old. So he's, Ferran Torres is terrific, Gavi. And then you've got this kind of strong defense, right? Like just players who've been there, you know, for a long, long time, like Emerick Laporte, Jordi Alba. Jordi Alba got an assist today. Sergio Busquets. Like, there's just like so many. It's kind of like this like little, hanging on, right, to this like. I mean, Busquets has been there forever, right? But you know, Jordi Alba was on that 2012 Euro team. I think that was kind of his like big breakout moment when Spain won the Euros. And so, you have these kind of old players, then you have these young, super talented, like 20-year-olds, and maybe this is like the ideal combination for a cup like this. So
it's a bit like about the Brazil squad, where it does seem like that good combination of experience and youth kind of coming together right at the right moment. I just given the conflict in Russia, Ukraine, I do want to get this right. Zagreb is in Croatia. We should know that because we were just talking about the Croatian national team. Fans
so
of the
he did not go to Russia.
he started in Croatia in their academy, I guess, and is not now plays with Leipzig. So Leipzig fans will know very well who Olmo is. So anyway, but it looks like alchemy with Spain right now. It's easy to overreact just after seeing one game, but right now the excitement is very high with Spain.
Yeah, and let's see. Yeah, like you said, let's see how they look when they're not playing Costa Rica. But I certainly came away impressed. It's sort of like you go into these World Cups, even as a fan, sort of in our position, we're trying to talk about these games every day, and there's you almost have to see at least one match to really start to get a feel for everything, right? Because just like having a strong working knowledge of 32 nations is a little bit too much, but you can see very quickly which teams are contenders and which aren't. I mean, I don't know. So anyway, in Germany, I think we have to hold. Let's just table any serious worries about them until they play one more match as well, because there's a long history too of teams that do really well losing that first match.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Let's see. Best kit, worst kit, Brandon. We didn't get a chance to really talk about Morocco, so I will throw in them for – it's a qualified best kit of the day, okay, because I love the red and green. It reminds me a lot of a Wolves kit from a couple of years ago, and also a Swansea kit from like 10 years ago from the Michu era. As you know, Brandon, I love green and red kits. It's just a combination I really like. Maybe it's – I enjoy Christmas. I don't know what it is. But the kit is nice, except for the front, which has like these two patches on either side. It looks very – it's like the flag. You'll have to look back at this kit later. But I'm going to call it like an A-minus, Brandon. I want to give it an A because I love the colors, but I got to knock it back a little bit. Any other kit thoughts before we move on to tomorrow's matches?
Spain is in the Morocco camp where I thought their fit was on point, except their collar on their shirt is too fussy. So they get dock points for their Croatia classic checkerboard kit. I think they're going to walk away with the trophy today. And the worst kit is the
easiest
call. It's too
easy, though. It's always the same kit, It's too easy.
It is, but, I guess that's like, what's a good analogy? Like somebody – it's like Counting Crows, August and Everything After will always be their greatest album because that's where they started, and they'll just be coasting on that legacy forever. So the Croatia kit is like the August and Everything After of kits.
Okay.
Will be with us forever.
I think Croatia could pull out of Recovering the Satellites, Brandon.
Okay. I hope it's not a long December for this Croatian team, Josh.
I think they want it to be a long December.
That's right.
All right.
but quickly, we have to flag Belgium for worst kit. Like their Guy Fieri, truck stop flame kit. This has got to go.
You've got if you're gonna do red, you gotta go all red. You've gotta do it like the Dutch, right? You've gotta do like all like the all orange kit, right? The red with the black just looks like a elementary school soccer kit or something like that. Like it's, you know, sort of like it's a boy, like it's colors that boys like, you know, red and black.
Yeah.
But just not very interesting.
So, all right, Josh, it's the World Cup minute. Yes, I'm stepping over you because the drill. We've got precious little time here, and we've got some bangers tomorrow or day five.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, Switzerland, Cameroon kicks things off at 5 a.m. I'm kind of interested in this match. I mean, Cameroon is they're not like Costa Rica level. I don't know what we can really expect from them, but this Swiss team is—they're just like they're real like a greater than the sum of their parts club or nation, I should say. Can I still call them a club? I don't really know. I guess
they're not a club they're a federation.
They're a federation, yes, the Swiss Federation. But they very frequently punch above their weight, right? And so and they've got a couple of players that, you know, I think you and I are both fans of in our
for
way,
sure.
Right? I mean, there's elements of the Swiss team that I'm sort of interested in. I mean, obviously you have Granit Xhaka, who has been playing out of his absolute mind for Arsenal so far this season. Mm-hmm. Scored like I don't even understand how it's happened. He scored like 11 goals. It's not that many, but it feels like he scored like 11 goals for Arsenal this year. He's constantly in the box, constantly involved, playing as this almost like it's like he's having like a Yaya Toure season. Like it's absolutely insane how well he's playing right now.
It's like a Swiss Insanity, I think you could call it, maybe.
Yeah, it is.
Well,
I think he's a little better than that. Yeah, I'll give him more credit than that. But and then you got Shaqiri, who is, I mean, certainly on the downside of his career, but you know, a fun little ball of. I mean, there was a guy in the NHL, Brandon. I can't think what his name. Pavel Bure, I think, and his nickname was Little Ball of Hate. And I feel like that's a good nickname for Jordan Shaqiri as well. It's just a little spitfire, easy player to root for. And so yeah, and then you've got Akanji in the back, who has been absolutely spectacular so far for Man City. Kind of an under radar signing for them, at least from my perspective. And he has displaced Diaz, who has been terrific for Man City. And so, Kanji back there. And so there's just a lot of, you can kind of see a spine of a team here that could be, you know, just really hard to break down. I don't know if the goals are there. I guess that's really the question with them. It's sort of often the question with these clubs that have a lot of interesting parts, you know, but I'm really excited to see how this all shakes out tomorrow. I don't know if you have any other thoughts on Cameroon or Switzerland.
Well, I will just say I had my say about MLS call-ups with Walker Zimmerman for the U.S. I mean, to say nothing of Gareth Bale, but Shaqiri plays for the Chicago Fire in the MLS right now. And I would have been sad if my rule about no MLS call-ups was put into effect because I love Shaqiri. I love the power cube.
A lot of MLS on the Canadian. Power cube, yeah. A lot of MLS on the Canadian team too, Brandon. So I feel like your MLS, it's like the tournament's not setting up to punish you for your MLS banter. Although Canada did lose, so
we'll see. Walker Zimmerman scoring the trophy winning goal in the World Cup final match. Why not? Yeah, sure.
The 8 a.m. game though, this is the most World Cup-y of games, right? Uruguay, South Korea. So excited about this one.
Yes.
You have Brazil, Serbia, which has the stars later on, Portugal, Ghana a little bit too, but Uruguay, South Korea, I feel like any like result is on the table for this one. I mean, you know, Darwin Nunez has really found his form with Arsenal the last, or excuse me, not Arsenal, with Liverpool the last handful of weeks. And Son is back and should be available to play tomorrow as well. He had this, I think like fracture his eye socket, something like that. He had his eye socket. No big deal. He's back from his fractured eye socket. So he'll probably have some kind of mask on, like Rip Hamilton, for this game. There's been a lot of masks, though. Who was the guy? There's a guy who came on today for Belgium had a mask on.
I couldn't recognize him with the giant mask on. So, you know, you got to ask somebody else. It's a very mask-heavy tournament. I mean, I wonder if they could do, like, an inflatable bubble around Son's head. It would make it very difficult to head the ball. I feel like we've been without Son for too long. Like, to go without Son for even 1 or 2 weeks in the Premier League is already too long. Because if you're not familiar with him from his exploits at Spurs in the Premier League, he is just a basket of joy. Yeah. I was giving Virgil van Dijk a hard time yesterday for never having a smile on his face. It's the opposite with Son.
That's true. Yeah, and to go without Son you and I grew up in Michigan. We often go without Son for several months in the winter, you know, to go even one day is really, I was trying to work that in.
I was never going to edit these podcasts, Josh, but I might have to edit that joke out. We'll see.
Yeah. So I think this should be a really fun match. The South Korea team has put in a lot of time together. Maybe it's a little similar to Switzerland, where it's not necessarily a bunch of household names on this squad, but they're really cohesive. They played a lot together, and so I think that they really have a chance. And then Uruguay is just an absolute force in the World Cup. They have been forever. The weird thing about this Uruguay team, though, to me, is just that there are so many players still in this Uruguay squad who I just assumed had left, you know. I was just like, wait, they're still there? Like, I didn't realize. I mean, okay, yeah, like
Diego Forlan is still starting for them.
Yes, no Forlan. Diego Godin still is. I mean, how old is Diego Godin? He might be 40 years old, Brandon.
This is the most ageist episode of the podcast we've ever recorded, but I'm into it. Yeah.
We're older than most of these guys, so it's Godin is 36. He turns 37 in February. Godin, of course, is a legend in La Liga and international football. But I think that it's can this Cavani Suarez, the theme so far, I feel like what I'm feeling right now is that you have this kind of 2010s cycle of players, some of whom are still playing in the World Cup, some of whom are still seen, but it feels like what we're seeing right now is this changing of the guard, right? We're seeing these 18, 19, 20 year olds really shine. It's kind of funny because it doesn't feel like we, outside of players like De Bruyne, it doesn't feel like we have as many like in their 20s prime players that we're like super duper excited about. Whereas the really young guys are the ones that I'm interested in, right? Like there's a lot of players between like 18 and 21 that I'm really excited about seeing. And so Darwin Nunez too. I mean, he's 23. So I guess he's just outside my band of ages, but you know, this guy is like, he's just a terror. And I think it feels like he almost might be even better in international football than he is for Liverpool, right? In a more structured league where it feels like his kind of raw insanity might really might really work in the international stage.
Yeah, under the tutelage of Luis Suarez, your insane side will definitely come
That's
out.
That's true. That's like studying your Palpatine. That's so true. It's gonna work him, isn't it?
He's got the hair of Cavani and the mentality of Suarez. He is the perfect. If you were to build a Uruguayan in a lab, you'd come out with Darwin Nunez, I think.
It's awesome. And then, you know, Valverde and Bentancur in the middle. Partially it's because I really like the first World Cup I really, really fell in love with was the 2010 World Cup. And so and that was obviously the Luis Suarez World Cup in some ways. I mean, obviously it was the Spain won, but Suarez had that incredible moment against Ghana and then Diego Forlan, of course, as well. And that team was just so lovable.
Did he also bite the Italian player in that tournament? Was he biting in that
I think the biting happened in 2014, if I recall.
I can't keep all of his biting incidents straight.
Of all the bites. It's like Tyson and Holyfield. Yeah, which there's so many bites. But, we like Uruguay and we like South Korea, and so that's just a fun, like, I'm just, as a neutral, I think that's a really fun match to watch. And then Portugal Ghana, Ronaldo free agent. I mean, he's playing for a paycheck now, Brandon. I mean, Ronaldo, like, who knows what'll happen with him? I mean, this guy is
mercenaries don't die, Josh. They just go to hell to regroup. That's what they say.
Yeah, it's amazing that they were like, not only are we letting Ronaldo go, we're selling the club. We're out, you know. What a weird duo. How did it happen the same day? It was like we've had enough, you know. This Ronaldo thing was enough for us. We are done. I don't want any more of this stuff. So, but this Portugal team is loaded. I mean, it's, and maybe my like Premier League bias is showing here a little bit, but they're so good. I mean, they have, you know, even you put Ronaldo aside for a minute. I mean, João Felix, Bernardo Silva, João Cancelo. I don't know. You could be Pepe and Diaz as your central defenders. Like,
you want to talk about so old people, Josh? Pepe is, give it. I've just looked up Pepe's age because I knew he had to beat all these guys. Give me a guess.
I am going to guess that Pepe is 38.
On February 26th, this coming February, they're going to throw the party of the century for Pepe for his 40th because he is currently 39.
Wow. Yeah. That's impressive. Wow. Is he going to start all three of these games? That's wow. All right. Well, let's see what happens there. But this is, it's a loaded team. It has not really been, they're kind of like, I mean, everything I was saying about Switzerland and South Korea, it's kind of the opposite, right? This is an incredibly talented team that has not really been better than the sum of its parts so far. It's actually been worse than the sum of its parts in some ways. And I didn't even mention Bruno Fernandes. I guess he can't even like crack this lineup, right? So we're just looking at some predicted lineups for tomorrow's matches. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's a very loaded team that has brilliant players who can't even crack the 11. But I actually think, like, if Ronaldo got injured in the 8th minute, that would actually be the best thing that could happen for Portugal. Like, it'd be real, like, Ewing theory for any Americans who know that.
Last time Ronaldo got injured in a major tournament, Portugal went on and won the bloody thing. If you'll remember the Euros when
that's true. Beat France, exactly. So. Yeah, that's true. He like pretended he was coaching. Remember, he like stood like he was like allowed to do that.
The agent is on the phone with him. Like, you've got to be visible. You know, Nike demands that you are visible on the sidelines.
No one else is allowed to stand in the coach's box, but you can. And then you've got Ghana, which I shouldn't say more anonymous kind of team because I you know, familiar with about half these players, like in the, you know, than the expected 11 for tomorrow. You got Jordan Ayew, who's kind of, he's fine, right? Fine forward for Palace, classified as a midfielder in fantasy weirdly this year. Then you got Salisu and Amarty, who are both fine. You got Tariq Lamptey, who is very promising but hasn't really been able to capitalize on that. You got Thomas Partey, who's been excellent, right? So you have solid Premier League level defenders in this squad, but I don't know, you know, but this is a long way of saying, I mean, this is a long way of me vamping, Brandon, because I don't know what to say about this Ghana team other than I know some of the players. Yeah. Let's see how it all works out. Do you have any thoughts on Ghana, the Black Stars?
Ghana is always a team that the U.S. ends up playing in the World Cup for whatever reason, and we've had some incredible moments. We've probably already talked about U.S. Ghana World Cup moments during the World Cup minute. I'm thrilled that the U.S. doesn't have to play them because no matter what the squad is, they always seem to bring some sort of they bring the heat, Josh. So I'm not expecting them to be pushovers by any stretch. That's my thought. Good luck to Portugal.
We're going super long here, so let's. Yeah, good luck to Portugal. We're going super long here, so we'll finish off with Brazil. Brazil playing Serbia. We now it's been confirmed that Mitrovic. I always want to call him Mitro. That's our shorthand on the pod. But Mitro is back in training, and his coach was basically like he would play without a leg. So I think that we will see Mitro tomorrow. Obviously, he's a key to that team. Although they have plenty of other, you know, Milinkovic, Savic, and Tadic are both terrific. We found out today, Brandon, that there are two Milinkovic, Savics on this team. Incredible. Try saying that three times fast.
And they're brothers.
They're brothers, exactly. One's the keeper, though, so it should be easier to keep them apart, I think. Tell them apart. And then they're playing Brazil. This is an absolutely insanely loaded team, which, the player that, you know, I want to see more of, just because I see him for Real Madrid, but I just don't watch as much Liga as I'd like, is Vinicius. You know, I just really want to see how he looks, and maybe this, again, like, this is another kind of like those Spanish players we were talking about before, the 19 and 20 year olds. Feels like he's another one of those players who could really, he's 22, so he's like another player who I think could really come out, and this could be his I don't even know, Ronaldinho moment or something, right? Like, he just like comes out and shines.
It really could be. And Vinicius Jr. has that sort of complete package, like, physically he's got Just like the right frame, the right height, the right build, and he is incredibly fast and can finish. Yep. So I really don't know what else you would want from a player like him. So I think if you're a player like Richarlison, who is also trying to break into the Brazilian starting 11, also struggling to get minutes at Spurs, even though that was a good move for him to play in the Champions League. It's a very tough lineup. You've got Martinelli, who's having a great season at Arsenal. Rafinha, who moved from Leeds to Barcelona. There are, I feel like they're going to be a very interesting team. And if they gel, if they get the starting 11 right, and they gel, then they'll do well. But I could also see Brazil laying an egg in this first match if Serbia really just challenges them to play a very physical match. Because if anybody has ever watched Neymar play, you would mistake him for a sack of potatoes with legs because, he falls hard and he falls often.
Yeah. Okay, he's great though. He's a brilliant player. Let's see what happens. The one question I have is just their defense is a little old, and that's the one thing I'm a little
so ageist. I love this.
What is up with
the old? People are going to come at us.
We've done hundreds of pods. I can't remember us ever talking about people's age this often on the podcast. So anyway, we know that Brazil is loaded. They're contenders. So far, we've seen the top contenders have really annihilated the people that they played outside of Argentina, I suppose, another strong contender. But I think that let's see what we see out of Brazil tomorrow. I think that they should win. They're certainly a strong betting favorite to do it. And if they come out there and beat Serbia 3-0, 4-0, 4-1, whatever, I'm just listing numbers now, then we'll kind of know a lot, and they'll certainly be kind of the team to beat in this World Cup, I think. So that's it, Brandon. Another 15-minute pod, right? Plus or minus 25 minutes. Thanks to everyone for listening.
Yeah.
I want to jump in. If you know people...
Go ahead. Well, I'll give the pitch. If you... recommend the pod to your friends. If you have friends who are just like, hey, I watched some World Cup on TV, feed them this podcast. See if it can get them a little bit more engaged. But if you're listening on our podcast feed, you can also watch Josh and I talk. We are recording this as a video, and it's on our YouTube as well. So you go to youtube.com/alwayscheating or just Google Always Cheating on YouTube, and it'll come up. So every one of these World Cup minutes is up there in video format. And if you can rate and review and recommend the pod, it helps us tremendously. This is it's a daunting experiment for us, Josh. We're not used to podcasting every day. But so far, so fun, so good. I'll say. Yeah.
Ooh, so far so fun. The perfect note to end on. Thanks for listening. And again, if you have friends who are into the World Cup and they want a little daily dose, that's what we're providing. So get them on. We're on Spotify, Spotify, YouTube. I don't know, Apple. Where else?
All of them.
Wherever. All the various and all the podcasting small ones, too. Technologies. Yeah. All right. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.